Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist on the air for the Heritage Radio Network. And here we are in beautiful downtown Bushwick. It's a sunny, hot day, but luckily the air conditioner is working today. So I have many guests today, so we're going to get started. But first I have to tell you our sponsor today is Whole Foods Market. So it says on this little sheet, Whole Foods Market reminds you that every bite has a story. How do you like that? So whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscientious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps support things like animal welfare, organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. So I guess that's another reason to shop at Whole Foods. Whole Foods is a great place. The prices are, you know, a little higher than regular, but you certainly get the quality there. And I shop there occasionally. I live on the west side, and we have one right at Columbus Circle. So my guest today and our topic is silk and silkworms and the whole history and technology. We won't talk too much about the technology, but we'll talk a little bit about it. So my guests today are the following people. Ariana, who works with the silkworms in the American Museum of Natural History, and the Discovery Room, where she has established a nursery, I noticed, and has the silkworms. And her helper is Alex, right? Alex, what's your official title there?
Volunteer.
Volunteer. Okay. And Chin Lee.
Hi.
And Chin Lee has expertise in raising silkworms, right?
Oh.
You've done that for years?
Yeah, for fun.
For fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I guess everybody is loud enough because Nat is not saying anything, so that's good. So we're going to start right off, and as I said, this is Bernie Wides, a naturalist, and I met Ariana at the museum where we both work, and I was very impressed with the silkworm operation. Now, the reason we had the silkworms at the museum was that we had this great exhibit called
The Silk Road.
And we had live silkworms so people could see how the process starts and all that. So I'm going to turn it over now to my guests. And Chin Lee, are you going to start and tell about?
Yeah, sure.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
A silkworm is not a worm, it's an insect. Basically, it's a caterpillar. And in Chinese, we say chan. In the Chinese the character, you can exactly say it's an insect. It's never a worm.
Okay, it's never a worm. It's
never
an insect.
A worm, yeah.
So the Chinese character that you would write is the character for insect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Partially, you can tell it's insect.
Insect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's native to Asia, as many people know. It's from China, many years ago, and it's important economic insect since it's been a cocoon of very fine and strong silk. A silkworm looks like it has many legs, but only the first three pairs are the real legs, and rest of the 10 legs just help the silkworm to climb to on the plants. And the tiny sharp pointed tip on the back of the body is the most important part of the whole body, because right beneath that point, the tip is the heart, and so they cannot be attacked. That part cannot be attacked, otherwise they would die.
Right,
yeah,
so that's
right away.
A sort of a defensive evolutionary thing.
Yeah, and
then put the heart near the rear, toward the back. Yeah,
and then the tiny black lines are both sides of the body. It's the place there's how they breathe.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't breathe like we do. They have just openings that go directly.
Yeah, those are called spiracles.
Spiracles.
Those little black dots.
It's like caterpillars and a lot of other insects,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. And then some people say they are blind, and then some people say they do have a sight, but very poor.
Okay.
So I'm not sure about that.
Uh-huh.
But I know they're very sensitive to wind, that if we get close to them, they move.
They move.
Yeah.
Okay, they can feel slight air currents.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, vibration. So that's why some people say they have sight, some people say they are blind.
Okay, so nobody really knows.
Maybe somebody do know, but
but they haven't told us about it
yet. There's many different articles that when I do research, some say yes, they do, some say they don't.
Okay, so how did you get involved in this?
It's always very fascinating since I was a child, that everyone, they raise a silkworm. I'm from Taiwan, that everyone in Taiwan, every kid, everybody raises silkworm at least once in our lifetime
as
a pet.
As a pet.
Yeah,
right.
And then we spoke before, like we usually bought our silkworm in the grocery store.
In the grocery store. Yeah. Ah. I wonder if Whole Foods would carry them if we asked them to carry it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We basically tell the owner we pick us the very little amount of silkworm and we pick out the silkworm and buy for very little money.
Yes.
And we pick out the mulberry leaves everywhere. All we can buy.
Okay.
From
so
the grocery store.
Many, all over the country. In
over
Taiwan,
the country.
And China,
yeah.
Korea, mm-hmm. and probably Japan,
yeah.
also.
Mm-hmm. And even here, too.
Even here. Yes.
Yeah.
You had to go up to Inwood Park to get.
Yeah, Chin Lee can tell you a little bit more about
sure.
the history
yeah.
in New
go
York
ahead.
City
yeah.
of
sure.
silkworms.
Yeah, once a park ranger in Inwood Hill Nature Center told me that about 100 years ago, the New York City government tried to set up the silk industry here.
Ah.
And they import lots of silkworm and mulberry tree from Asia. But the whole project failed because the silkworm meant to be raised indoor and they raised uh-huh. the silkworm outdoor, uh-huh. so every silkworm died. And then, but because they plant lots of mulberry tree that time, so we end up with so many trees here because the bird continually carry the seed over mm-hmm. the place. So right now, we can find lots of mulberry tree in Bronx, in Queens, in Brooklyn, in Inwood, right? And then on Roosevelt Island too. And ah. I believe many, many other places too.
Probably the
yeah.
birds have spread the seeds.
Yeah.
The
and then
city.
Because right. the berries, it's easy to carry even by human beings. So mm-hmm. the mulberry tree is everywhere. And the mulberry tree is very easy to grow in many places in the whole wide world.
And they survive the winter, okay?
Yeah, and I heard that the pioneer in Utah a long time ago, they were encouraged to plant the mulberry tree and raise the silkworm so they can be self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that didn't work out too well.
Work out very well.
They
so,
were raising
yeah.
them and
mm-hmm.
for silk?
Successfully.
Really?
Yeah.
In Utah.
In Utah.
Is it the Mormons, do you know? That
yeah.
did it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very, they're very industrious people.
Yeah,
Mormons,
very.
Right?
Even today.
Even today.
Yeah.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Very hardworking.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that they were in the silkworm business.
So, yeah. Even
are they still doing it today?
No.
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 Not
as I know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. That's good. That's a good introduction. Do you have some more you want to cover?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I want to talk about the color of the cocoons. Like today in the market, we can find the most common one is the one spent the white cocoons.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, they believe white cocoon is better because it's easy to dye into any colors.
I see. Uh-huh. So the silkworm makes a cocoon.
Cocoon. Mm-hmm.
When does he make the cocoon?
Then we have to talk about the life stage of the silkworm. They
okay.
divide to four stages.
Okay. Are you going to talk about the life stage?
Sure. Or sure. Yeah.
We,
at the
okay.
beginning, the first stage is egg. They egg and
egg,
then
right.
yeah. They start their life as tiny egg, and the egg will darken into black as the silkworm larva.
Larva. Right.
Yeah. Develop inside about 2 weeks. And the egg itself is transparent, but we saw the egg is turning darker. It's the baby caterpillar inside with hair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then when they're ready to hatch, and they will chew a hole on the eggshell, and they come out.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And like a tiny pencil line.
Oh, okay.
Like a tiny pencil line.
They're very small.
Very small, very fragile.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then they will turn to... So when they come out as a caterpillar, and then they would stay inside the cocoon as a pupa, and then by the end they would come out as a mouse as an adult. So that's their entire life cycle. And when the egg is laid, I need help.
Oh, okay. Well, the fascinating thing about the silkworms is they hatch out and they're so small you can barely even see them.
Mm.
And they are just going to grow as a caterpillar. They're going to multiply their weight 10,000 times in 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then when they're big enough, they will start spinning the cocoon. And the fascinating thing about the silkworms is that their silk glands are actually modified salivary glands. So they have this spinneret near their mouth. And they move their head in a figure eight pattern to get the silk out. So inside their body, they have these giant silk glands, and the silk is actually a liquid, and when it comes into contact with the air, it solidifies, and that's what silk is.
Mm-hmm.
And silk is not shot out of the body, like maybe you see Spider-Man, he shoots the silk up, but it's not like that. The silk actually has to be pulled out of these silk glands. So a spider will pull the silk out with its legs, unless, of course, you flick it off of a the ceiling or something, and then the gravity pulls the silk up. But the silkworm pulls the silk up by moving its head in a figure eight pattern. So mm-hmm. it's going to build this cocoon with this really long single strand. And so it has to move its head in a figure eight pattern 3,000 times to form this cocoon, this nice protective cocoon.
Okay, so first it makes the cocoon mm-hmm. out of the silk. That's yeah. the silk is used for the cocoon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And okay. each thin thread of the silk is very strong. So compared with the same size of steel, it's stronger than steel.
Stronger than steel. Yeah.
And the whole cocoon is one thread.
Okay, one thread, one continuous thread.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it's very hard to touch, mm-hmm. and so they look like a tiny egg shape,
right.
and some of them look like a peanut. And but when you touch and when you look carefully, one side is rounder and softer than the other side,
uh-huh.
and the rounder side, the softer side, is the side the mouth is going to come out.
Okay, mm-hmm. I see. So you think if we played music while they were doing this figure eight motion, it would help?
Not as I know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but it's very important we shouldn't move them.
Right.
Just let them quietly spin the whole cocoon.
They just move their heads in that yeah. figure eight pattern.
Yeah.
And that draws out the silk
mm-hmm. yeah.
from the glands.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. after the 24 hours, then we cannot see through the cocoon, but inside they're still very busy and
okay.
lots of things still going on. And when they are at a stage of caterpillar, they...
Yes.
Mold, they change their skin 4 times,
mm-hmm.
but they inside they're going to change skin one more time.
That's one more time
before they come out as a mouse, and they're going to stay there for 2 weeks.
Yeah, okay. So they'll be a caterpillar. Then when they finish spinning the cocoon, then they shed the skin one more time, and then they're in a pupa,
mm-hmm.
and then they're going to be in the pupa for 2 weeks, and then while they're in the pupa, this radical transformation is happening, and they're becoming a moth. Then they'll shed the pupa skin, emerge as moths. And then they're going to break out of the cocoon as moths.
Yeah, in butterflies, it's called an instar.
Yeah,
they
same
use that
thing.
Same
yeah,
thing?
Same thing mm-hmm. with the
right.
silk one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so I want everybody to realize what's happening here is that that's the beginning of silk, when this caterpillar makes its cocoon, okay? And there's a difference between the cocoons of butterflies and moths. Okay, so the moth makes a cocoon because it spins the silk around it. But the butterfly, it's called a chrysalis, and it's actually the last stage of its instar that becomes its chrysalis. So it's the skin, because they don't make silk, butterfly caterpillars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what I learned from the museum. Okay, how are we doing here? Good, you're
Good.
Doing very well.
Thank you.
So the silkworm actually is spinning the silk as soon as it emerges as the caterpillar. And so it's spinning the silk, and that's how it sticks to surfaces. So, but we actually use the cocoon to make silk. So this continuous thread, we would unravel it, and then we would reel the silk, and then we would make fabric out of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have about a minute left for our first segment. So is there something else you want to add to that part? And then we'll come back with Alex, and you're going to talk about
Spider silk.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. So I think we have the whole story just about, but there's a lot of legends and stories about silkworms, aren't there? In Chinese and in Taiwan. Can you tell us one in 1 minute?
Okay, the most common one is the lady called Xin Lin Shi. In Chinese, we call Ruozu. And she was the one, the legend says she once was drinking the tea under a tree, and then when the silk cocoon fell into her tea, and then she pulled out the fine thread, and then gradually she found out and discovered the caterpillar was the one spinning the silk, and she told everyone, so everyone learned. But this technique knowledge was kept secret for a long time, for 1,000 years, until one Catholic priest. And he brought the silkworm into Europe. And so the whole secret was revealed to the whole wide world.
Right, it was a big secret. The Chinese...
Yeah, it was
punishable for a long time.
What? Punishable by death,
right,
if you took the secret of silk out of China.
Yes, and you know, it was a great secret because, you know, people never figured it came from an insect, right?
Yeah.
The silk.
Yeah, even Aristotle wrote about the silkworms, and he wrote about silk, and he had no idea where it came from.
Yeah. So it's an ancient industry, really.
Yeah, 5,000 years old.
That old, okay. Mm-hmm. So can you say that woman's name again?
In English, they say Shi Ling Si.
Shi Ling
Si. But in Chinese, we say Ruozu.
Ruozu.
Ruozu. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll never remember it, but it's fun to try to say it because the sound is really great. Okay, and what about, you said as a child in Taiwan that you had a silkworm.
Yeah,
right?
Everyone.
But what about here in the States? Well, we don't have much time left, I think, so we'll leave that for the second half. So you can tell us how you got into this business of raising silkworms.
Just a hobby.
The hobby.
It was a hobby.
In New York City, right?
You live in New York City? Yeah, in a tiny apartment.
A tiny apartment. Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, the silkworms are small, so you have, have enough room, right? Yeah. Okay, so I think what we're going to do now is take a break. And we'll be back in a minute. This is the Heritage Radio Network. The program is The Naturalist, and I have these terrific guests today. And we're all learning about silkworms and silk growing, and we try to say some of the Chinese words for it, but I'm not very good at that. But good. But gently.
From the lily white to the black as night, they all fall in love. The fools fall, the wise fall, the wet, the sprinkle, and the dry fall. From the man who drinks to the man who winks, they all fall in love. You may believe your broker is very mediocre, he plays with your stocks and bonds. At business he may blunder, but he's a perfect wonder when he plays with blondes. Old maids who object for,
old men you never would suspect for,
even babies much too young to crawl for, 'cause they all fall in love. Your pet parakeet.
Hi, this is Bernie Wides, back on the air for the Naturalist program. And today I have these terrific guests. And our sponsor today is Whole Foods Markets, which we spoke about silkworms before. I was wondering if Whole Foods would carry silkworms. I guess if there was enough demand for them, they would, right? Because they are a food item too, aren't they, in Taiwan?
Yeah, in just some culture, yes.
Just tell us briefly about that.
Have a silkworm as a food?
As a food, yes. Uh-huh.
I heard, and I actually have a friend who did try to eat a silkworm. Mm-hmm. As they say, it's very, very delicious, and they're basically very afraid of silkworm, but then they taste the inside, and they say it's very, very delicious. It's a high protein, and a lot of people here, they raise the silkworm to feed their reptile, too.
Oh, to feed their pets.
It's okay. Lots of nutrition.
That's how you can get silkworm food in the pet store. Is that right?
Not in the regular pet store.
You can't. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Usually people order from the website. Farm, they raise the silkworm. Or they sell the silkworm eggs. Huge quantity.
Right, right. Okay, so we're going to talk about another kind of silk now, because not only do silkworms make silk, right, Ariana and Alex? But there are other critters that do it too. So, Alex, you want to tell us about spider silk?
Sure. Spider silk comes from spiders such as the golden silk orb weaver, genus Nephila. This silk has a natural golden yellow color, so the name of that spider is named for the silk color rather than the spider itself. The females of that genus produce the silk to make their webs, and the typical female can produce about an 80-foot strand, and they can regenerate that in about a one-week period. So they use it to make their webs rather than a cocoon. Spider silk is about 2 times stronger than silkworm silk, and on the same order of strength as high tensile steel. Now, spider silk is over 2 times as tough as silkworm silk and more than 20 times as tough as high tensile steel. And now with those terms mean, strength is a measure of how much stress or pressure a material can take before breaking. So for example, if I took a thread between my hands and pulled on them, the point at which they break, that pressure that I put on it so that it would break, is its strength. And toughness refers to the amount of energy a material can absorb before breaking, in other words, how much it can stretch and deform before it snaps. So you can imagine that steel wouldn't stretch much, whereas silk from either a spider or a silkworm would stretch quite a bit before breaking. And that makes it a very versatile material because it is strong as well as tough, which is very valuable in the materials engineering industry. Now, one might ask why spider silk is stronger than silkworm silk. Both types of silk consist of protein chains that are rich in the amino acids alanine and glycine, and the small chemical differences between the two can account for things such as the color, but the difference in strength actually comes from the physical differences between the two, the way in which the proteins chain together and the orientation of them can change how strong they are, and the orientation for the spider silk is what makes it stronger than silkworm silk. So
there's a lot of interest now in using spider silk in other industries rather than just for textiles. There is interest in the biomedical field and also in defense technology for maybe using them in bulletproof vests. And I think... Okay. Bernie, you've probably seen the example of spider silk at the museum.
Right, that beautiful, the big piece of golden silk.
Yeah, so Alex can talk about that.
Right.
There have been attempts in the past decades to sort of bring back the traditions of classic silk making, and certain people have tried to work with spider silk as a way of bringing about more interest in the subject. And one recent attempt this past decade has resulted in an 11-foot by 4-foot woven tapestry made entirely out of golden orb weaver silk. It took 70 people about 4 years to do this. They did this at Madagascar, where these spiders run wild. It is estimated that 1 million spiders provided the silk to make the tapestry. And these spiders were caught in the wild, and the difference... Well, spider silk is tough to work with because, unlike silkworms, where you can just get a big container and, you know, fill the container with silkworms and sort of farm them, you can't do that with spiders because these spiders are very territorial, will attack each other. So what these people had to do was take each individual spider, extract the silk from them, and then release them back into the wild where the silk could regenerate, and they could even take the silk from the same spider multiple times. But took them 4 years, and they collected 1 million spiders to provide the silk.
It's really magnificent. So if you ever go to the American Museum of Natural History, you should check it out. Check out the spider.
Yeah,
silk.
Where is it? Tell people where it was located.
So it's right in the Great Hall. It's on the first floor of the museum. It's this nice golden tapestry.
Yeah, the hall with the big canoe hanging.
From the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Everybody knows it as the canoe hall. So that's what we tell people if they want to see it there.
Yeah,
right?
And if you want to go to another museum to see some more silk, at the Museum of Arts and Design, which is at Columbus Circle, they have an exhibit called Dead or Alive, and it's open till October, and they have a chandelier made out of silkworm cocoons. So they didn't destroy the silkworms to make this chandelier. They used 12,000 cocoons, and they're all arranged around these lights, and it's really gorgeous. Mm. And they, the pattern is sort of half of the figure eight pattern that the silkworm makes when it's spinning its cocoon.
Mm. Yes, I've seen it there. It's really nice. Yeah, that's a nice exhibit. And when is it closed? It's closing soon.
I think
soon.
It's October.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they have a huge jewelry collection there, and when you go there, there are drawers in the floor where they have all the jewelry. And you can pull out the drawers and see their collection. The collection is on exhibit. They have all these wooden drawers under the cases.
Oh, yeah.
You just pull out the drawers, and there you'll see somebody's jewelry and all that. Mostly contemporary jewelry, but they do have a historic collection, too. Yeah, that's a great little museum.
I also want to note that the spider silk tapestry at the Museum of Natural History is the only example of such a tapestry that exists today. The only other... tapestry made of spider silk on record was made in the late 1800s, was on display in Paris at the turn of the century, and it has since been lost. So This tapestry at the museum is the only spider silk tapestry in existence today that we know of.
Mm-hmm. So if they want to do this commercially, it would be very labor intensive, very expensive to produce.
It would now, yes, but there have been efforts to try and make spider silk, synthetic spider silk, but they're still working out all the kinks. It's a very complex undertaking because they have to get everything just right, to make this material be as strong as it is in nature.
Yeah. Okay, so that's an interesting little sidelight about the spider silk. But let's get back to our main topic of silk moth silk. Okay, so what about the process? Once they the cocoon, the critter has come out of the cocoon, then they collect the cocoons, or they do it while the critter's in there and they drop them in hot water and...
Yeah, traditionally what would happen is when the pupa is transforming into the moth, it comes out and the moth will release proteolytic enzymes to make a hole in the cocoon and break out. And so like we said, it's one continuous thread of silk, but when the moth comes out, it breaks that silk. So if traditionally you would boil the cocoons or put them in an oven and then you would kill the pupa inside and then you would unravel the cocoon. But there is such a thing on the market now. There's tussa silk, and that's using wild silk, so you collect the cocoons and then you wouldn't reel them, you would spin the cocoons, but also you can buy vegan or pea silk, and that is a different type of silkworm cocoon they let the silkworm come out, and then they use the cocoons.
Okay, so but when he comes out, doesn't he cut through the thread?
Yeah, so it's just a different way of spinning the silk. Yeah, so they just, instead of reeling the cocoon off, they spin it like any other fiber, and they say it's soft and fluffy.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, I do wonder whether they could extract the silk from the silk caterpillar directly. Like they do with the spiders, as opposed to waiting until it
makes the
fully
cocoon.
Encases itself, right?
Yeah. Maybe they could do that. Mm-hmm. Train those critters that, you know, I think the music will do it. That's what I said before. We play music, and they start shaking their heads like that. They can just get them out and reel it in.
Yeah.
Okay, so is anything else we should add to this? Because we didn't go into the industrial part of it at all. What happens when they start taking the silk off the cocoon, right? It's one strand, and they try to keep it this one strand without it breaking, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this one strand is between 300 to 900 meters long. So it's very, very long. And the length depends on how well the silkworm has been eating. So by comparison, the Empire State Building is about 440 meters tall. So one of these cocoons unraveled is higher than the Empire State Building. And 10 cocoons unraveled is higher than Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. But still, it takes a lot of cocoons to make silk. So it takes between 2,500 to 3,000 cocoons to make 1 pound of silk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very, very labor intensive. So you can appreciate why silk is so expensive. Because even it takes 110 cocoons to make one silk tie and 630 cocoons to make a silk shirt. So they would unravel the cocoons, weave the strands together, and then weave them to make whatever product they want, and then dye them later on.
Mm-hmm. So do you know if the weaving is now done mechanically?
It yeah, in the factories.
Power looms.
Yeah, but you still need a lot of human labor to...
Yes, you have to be careful not to break that strand. And it's so, the diameter of it is so small. It's like silk.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing is the color of the cocoons, which Chinley can talk about.
Yeah. Not only the most common white, we can also find peach. Peach color, pink, and green, gold, or as in some market we can find red.
Okay, does that depend on the kind of silkworm or what they're eating?
Yeah, on the species. I don't think it's depend on their eating, but the quality of eating and the frequency of their feeding then can affect the size of the cocoon.
Okay.
But I think the color of the cocoon is result of centuries of breeding.
Breeding them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, and I understand that they bred them so much that they can't survive in the wild now. Is that right? On their own?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is that? Why can't they survive?
Because the silkworm cannot touch a drop of water. They get enough liquid from the fresh leaf or the artificial mulberry chow, and those two types of food are their only food they eat. Okay. And they got enough water from them.
And they're so weak they can't even move on to their food. So we have to physically move them when they first hatch. We have to use a paintbrush because they're so small and delicate and put them onto their food. And then when they're moths, we've bred them so that they cannot fly, so they can't escape. Mm. Yeah. So you have to move them too when they come out.
So what color are they as moths? Are they brown?
They're brown mostly moths? White, gray,
off white.
And they're small moths, right? Mm-hmm.
Small, yeah.
The females are a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm.
Right, well, they have to carry the eggs, so
yeah, hundreds of eggs.
Hundreds of eggs. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I know we had them on display at the Silk Road exhibit, but the Silk Road exhibit has left. It's probably on its way to somewhere else. But I know that Ariana still has the silkworms in the discovery room of the museum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if people wanted to come with their kids, they could get to see those silkworms?
Yeah, and also silkworms would be a good animal for the classroom or even for home.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For the parents.
Sort of a pet.
Yeah.
And where could they buy those? Online?
Online. And even just learn about the information about the silkworm, the parents or the teacher can go to lots of websites. Today, lots of websites provide all the information.
Website.
Yeah. And I know some of the farms in California or Florida, they do sell the silkworm as a caterpillar in different size. The eggs. And they do sell the artificial mulberry child too.
So if you really wanted to, you could raise them at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even a small apartment in New York City is
yes. Tell
very
us
possible.
Where do you raise your
just in small plastic container.
And you said you have a small apartment.
It's very small. Apartment.
Well, it's lucky you have a small pet because
if
you had a big Doberman Pinscher dog.
Yeah.
You know,
they're very clean and no smell, and they're very quiet. They are not violent at all, they just need to eat the leaves.
They eat all the time. That's
all
the job
time.
Of the caterpillar.
Yeah.
Its whole life is to eat. Eat and eat.
Only between two instar stage, they stop eating for about 2 days.
Oh,
they change the skin.
Okay.
After they change the skin, the mouth is bigger and the skin is wrinkled. And so they have more room to grow. Yeah, and every few days, they move to different stage.
Okay, so how many silkworms do you have in your apartment right now?
Right now, nothing.
Nothing?
Yeah, I'm still waiting for a whole bunch to hatch. But
then
we raised lots of generations in our apartment. Yeah.
Okay.
Last summer, we raised hundreds.
Uh-huh.
Those spend different colors.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been very nice.
Very nice.
So what do you do with the adults?
Because I was majoring in art in the school, in the college before. So
art, you majored in art?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
It's always very fascinating to see such a little creature and so little, but yet so perfect. And we use the cocoon for our project. We never collect the silk, but we do use the cocoon. We cut the cocoon open without hurting any pupa.
Okay, so you let the pupas emerge
as a moth.
As an adult moth.
Yeah, but then we keep all the cocoon and we make flowers or we can make anything. It's unlimited.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah.
And what about the moths? You have the moths flying around your apartment?
No, they never fly.
Oh, they can't
fly.
They just come out.
Yeah, they just find another mouse to mate. And they lay eggs in a few days.
Uh-huh.
And they die in about 1 to 2 weeks.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Those eggs can be, when they lay eggs, we can put a very good layer of wax paper, cover the whole container. And then we keep the wax paper with legs. Eggs, right.
That's all right.
And then if we keep those eggs in a zip bag very well, airtight container, and they can be kept in a refrigerator for 1 to 5 years.
The eggs? Really?
Yeah,
so that prevents them from hatching out if you put it in the refrigerator?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it depends on how well they develop. And then once we are ready to hatch, then we can just take the egg out and keep in the room temperature. In an airtight container, and they come out in a few weeks.
Right, that's terrific. Yeah. So you do the whole life cycle.
Yeah.
In your small apartment.
Yeah. So as a parent, as a parent or as a teacher, we can provide the children to watch the whole life cycle.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and then the raising a silkworm can be combined with art, music, science, or math.
Yes, you can do a whole cultural thing.
Yeah.
With it, that's really, really nice. Okay, so, We don't want people coming to your apartment, so we'll tell them to go to the museum instead, to see the silkworms, right? So you think you're going to have them a while, Ariana? What's happening to them?
Well, one of the issues with the silkworms is that they only eat mulberry leaves and mulberry chow. So if you're going to have them, you want to have a good supply of mulberry leaves. So we're only going to have the leaves here in New York until the end of October.
Oh, right.
So I might, at the end, just put the eggs in the fridge and wait until next May to hatch them out again.
And then I do want to mention those leaves. If you pick out a fresh leaf and keep them in a very airtight bag, they can be okay and fresh in the refrigerator for 2 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
But you can also order mulberry chow online and feed them the mulberry chow, but they prefer the leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. They grow much faster with the fresh leaves.
Aaron, do you want to talk a little bit about that naming project that you had for the silkworm at the museum?
Oh, well.
I thought that was a lot of fun when you did that.
So I
had... Tell us that story. I think we have time to do that.
Okay, so I had a lot of silkworms, and I am very passionate about the silkworms. So I thought it would be fun to name them all after people that are my friends on Facebook. So I named all of them, and I tagged my friends as different silkworms. And we also named one after Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's the director of the Hayden Planetarium. So he came and he met his silkworm, and then later we brought him some of the cocoons that the silkworms had spun.
Ah, yeah, that's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
That's very nice. So Neil must have been very happy.
Yes, he was very happy.
He has a great personality, right?
Yeah.
He's a terrific teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, when he was working at the museum, now he's, I think, on leave. Most of the time he makes these programs for NOVA,
mm-hmm.
the NOVA Science Series. He's a host, but he's a terrific guy. So I heard about that, you know, you had that naming thing. That was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything else anybody wants to add?
Well, I have a joke.
Oh, okay. A silkworm joke?
Yes, I have a silkworm joke.
Okay, good.
Courtesy of Janet Laminack. Two silkworms got in a race. They ended up in a tie.
Oh, okay. Anybody else have a joke? No, okay. Well, that's good. So just a little recap, because we probably have a few minutes left, is that what Alex said is that not only the silkworm moth makes silk, but many other critters make silk also, especially spiders. And the webs of spiders are silk, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're walking down a path in the woods and you feel something against you, it's probably... a web from a spider. So if you go hiking in the woods and you don't like that, never be first. Okay? Let somebody be first, and then you'll be in the middle, and you won't have to worry about getting into the silk of the spider webs. But it's harmless. It can't hurt you at all. And usually the spiders are so fast-moving, they'll get out of your way anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can repair their webs, Alex, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And why do they make webs?
The females make webs to... catch food, and the males will be attracted to them and they'll mate on the webs.
Mating on the web.
Yeah,
and the spider silk is so strong, it's 1/10 the size of a human hair, but it can stop a bee that's traveling 20 miles per hour when it hits that web.
That's it, right.
Yeah, which is why we want to use it in maybe bulletproof vests, things like that.
Yes, and sutures too, mm-hmm. I think. Did you mention that before? I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, for silk, they're used... for grafting and oral surgery, eye surgery, lip surgery.
Mm-hmm.
One example I heard is that if you had spider silk the thickness of a pencil, it could hold up a 747 jet.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That's a good image to think about. Is it a number two pencil or a number three?
Standard number two pencil,
number
right?
Two pencil. Okay, that's good. So I think we covered a lot of ground today. And folks, if you have any other questions about silkworms or spider silk or anything else having to do with it, I have all the experts here who I can always contact. So if you want to, you could put a comment at the end of the show, and we'll see that our experts get in.
Yeah,
and we'll answer you.
I love talking about silkworms. I actually drive everybody crazy. I went skydiving on Saturday, actually, and I talked to we had a lot of hours waiting to skydive, and I talked to my friend so much about silkworms, she wanted to jump out of the plane at the end. She was tired of hearing about the silkworms. So thank you, Rocky, for tolerating that.
Oh, Rocky, is that her name?
Yeah. I even missed our exit to get to the skydiving place because I was talking about silkworms and too involved.
Okay, so didn't they used to use silk for parachutes?
Yes, which I got to share with her that it was a relevant comment.
Yes, do they still use it?
No,
it's synthetic,
nylon
or rayon.
No, rayon.
Actually, those fibers are made the same way. They're extruded through spinnerets.
Oh.
Rayon and nylon and all that sort of monofilament. stuff.
Those are some of the materials that they're
copying.
They have is quote synthetic silk, but
right.
Each one has a one or two deficiencies mm-hmm. that can't match silk in some way.
Right, except that they're easy to produce. You
That's
don't have
right.
to sing songs to the spiders or the silkworm. So that was an attempt to have substitute silk, because during the war we couldn't get silk. We needed silk for parachutes and
mm-hmm.
all that kind of stuff. And that's when nylon and rayon and all those fabrics were developed, which are artificial silks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure everybody has something at home made of nylon or rayon, or even fishing line is
right,
similar. Today, the monofilaments
mm-hmm.
are extruded the same way as the silk is made. So I want to thank you all for coming on the show today. And let me just have everybody say a goodbye. So Chin Lee, that was very nice. Thank you for your
thank
help.
You.
And as I said, we don't want people coming to your apartment. But if they need help, you'd be glad to
yeah.
help anybody out, right?
They can contact me. And I would be very glad to give away the eggs, too.
Okay, that's good. I'm going to get everybody's email from this group. And if you want to contact them, you'll just let me know. So, Ariana, the future of silkworms in the museum, they'll be there for a while if people
as
want to see them.
As long as my boss lets me have them.
Okay.
Keep them.
Oh, Danny. Danny's
yeah.
your boss, right? He
yeah.
seems pretty nice, so I'd probably let you. And it's extra added attraction when the kids come up.
Yeah.
There, right?
Yeah. They want to take away some of my display space and make it smaller.
Ah. Okay. And Alex, how long will you be at the museum?
A little bit longer. Yeah. I'll be in the discovery room for my time at the museum.
Yep. And what's next after that?
I'm still looking.
Okay. You don't know. Okay.
Not quite.
So what we're going to do now is sign off. I want to thank everybody for coming today. And it was a terrific program, very interesting. And our sponsor today was Whole Foods Markets. And our next show is going to be on solar energy. And that'll be on next week, and I'll have a guest for then, and I hope you all tune in. And if you have any comments, be sure to send us your comments, good or bad. We can take it. So this is Bernie Wides, the naturalist, signing off for today.